I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
Welcome to Rich Text, a podcast about our cultural obsessions, like tradwife fiction.
If you're listening today, you're already a subscriber to our audio and written newsletter, Rich Text, on Patreon. Thank you, as always, for being here. You quite literally make our work possible.
We're here today because we read Carol Clare Burke's Yesteryear, and we wanted to talk about this buzzy novel. Everyone's talking about it. And also, like, maybe touch on some other tradwife fiction that's come out over the last year or two. But honestly, mostly Yesteryear, because it is the only one I finished in time for
guys,
this.
Guys, it's a lot of pages. And we had to watch a lot of television for other parts of our job, in addition to reading books.
We did. I kept having to put down my other tradwife books to do this, but to like watch The Valley, which juxtaposes really interestingly.
I know. I was going to say there are some like very fascinating themes when it comes to like domestic labor, motherhood, the expectations put upon women, you know, everything's connected. This is why we got into the game, because we're like, actually, The Bachelor and Bravo and literary fiction are the same.
They are the same. Exactly. And they explore our a common value set that we have been struggling to free ourselves from for centuries. So we've talked about tradwives before. And if you're like a woman on the internet, you are probably familiar with tradwives. But like, let's start by kind of laying
ground this discussion. So the idea of the tradwife originated about a decade ago in Red Pill forums, as so many brilliant ideas do, and really broke through to the mainstream around 2020.
Yeah, like around like 2019 to 2021, somewhere in there is definitely when I first picked up on this as a concept that people were talking about. You can see like trend pieces start to emerge around 2020. And the concept of a tradwife that was sort of fleshed out at this time is a married woman who embraces traditional gender roles, subservience to her husband, devoting herself to motherhood, to like the domestic arts, generally living this kind of lifestyle that's inspired by a sort of 1950s or pre-1950s ideal of like the perfect wife and mother. And in practice, it typically refers to like young, beautiful women who, you know, intentionally take this on almost self-consciously, maybe as an aesthetic or a political statement, an intentional like rejection of modern feminist ideals. Like there are a lot of women who are kind of doing many of these things that would not be referred to as a tradwife because they're like 57 or, you know, like they're not kind of turning it into an aesthetic. But in practice, it's bound up in this sort of conservative coded influencer branding context. And it's distinct from like just a stay-at-home mom because of that.
And what's interesting is that I think what we label tradwife online has kind of ballooned. You know, there is like a segment of tradwives who, as you said, take on this label, really intentionally brand themselves that way, got into the influencer game in order to kind of be a spokesperson for these particular ideals. And then there are some famous tradwives who maybe don't take on the label or accept it more passively. Even someone like Hannah Nealman, Ballerina Farm, who I think is arguably like the most famous tradwife on the internet, tries to do a dance where she exists in this like liminal space of never quite owning the label, but also never backing away from it. Someone like Nara Smith is also really interesting because in a lot of ways, she actually doesn't quite hew to like the central definition of a tradwife, but the way that she performs domestic arts with this ease, how young she is, the fact that her husband comes from like a prominent Mormon family. It's like these people kind of all get wrapped up in this label.
Yeah. And I think the Hannah Nealman element of this, like, it all starts with like the taxonomy, right? Like people are looking at influencers who are branding themselves in a certain way, and they maybe put a label on that. And then upstart influencers might intentionally embrace that more so. But either way, they're we're talking about people who are sort of intentionally choosing to curate their online personas in a way that jibes with these values and this right. template. Like Hannah Nealman and Nara Smith are very, very intentional about what they're doing. And what they're doing, those are slightly different things. You know, Nara Smith is making peanut butter sandwiches from absolute scratch, like nuts and bolts, but she's doing it wearing like a designer evening gown for some reason. That isn't the most trad thing, but it still speaks to many trad values of like being feminine and well-groomed and presented for your husband and soft-spoken and really competent at those domestic arts. So like they express it in different ways. So at some point, these influencers started to attract a lot of mainstream attention and these swarms of followers. And as that happened, as there was this like uptake of the concept into the mainstream, immediately there was like highly charged discourse around their existence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like there, and that is interestingly part of why a lot of these trad wives have managed to break out into the mainstream, because there is an adoration of them on the right and a fascination with them on the left.
Yes.
And that creates a massive audience.
Yeah, exactly. Like we there are different intersecting audiences, and because they exist at this sort of intersection of girl boss millennial feminism and the reactionary backlash to girl boss millennial feminism, that is something that is going to both attract and repel people across the spectrum, which is like that exact combination of revulsion and attraction is what's going to make someone really stuck on to one of these accounts.
They've got the magic sauce in that way. And it's true. That's such a good point, because you also do see arguments about the trad wife within the MAGA movement, for example, within like pink pill influencers.
And part of that is because these women are actually highly successful business owners.
Correct.
They are professionals. You know, what they're doing is a performance. It's artifice. It's carefully constructed. They're
and
full-time.
And it is making money.
It's making money.
Gobs of money.
If I bought one jar of sourdough starter from Ballerina Farm, like, that would be my impulse spending for the month, you know, and like that goes directly to the Nealmans. So like that is like kind of a thorny issue for people on both sides of this debate to kind of grapple with. Like on the left, you see people saying like, well, aren't these actually women who are living out feminist values? They are determining their own career paths. They're entrepreneurs. They're like savvy business people. On the right, that doesn't look like such a positive thing. But like these women are putting some of those like entrepreneurial, independent woman values into practice by developing their own brands and using them to make a ton of money and get huge brand deals. They're often like breadwinners in their families. The whole family can end up becoming sort of like their company, their factory that's putting out the content under their brand. At the same time, they are tactically invaluable propagandists for the right. And they make really seductive, appealing content that pretty explicitly attempts to persuade women that life will be softer and more joyful and more fulfilling if they give up their careers and their independence and devote themselves to serving men and having children.
And the Lord.
And the Lord. I mean, the
for some of
your
them.
Your husband sort of is the Lord on earth.
That's
right?
True. He's the conduit to the Lord.
You serve the Lord by serving your husband. You serve your husband, and therefore you've served the Lord. And so obviously that makes these women very important to the right, and they embody or project an ideal that a lot of conservative women and men, but as I think in the tradwife form, often it's specifically women, find really, really appealing. Like they see like all over their Instagram feed, like this life that looks so beautiful and romantic, that could be yours. And a lot of women on the left, I think it's actually more complicated, because I think a lot of women on the left are horrified by the idea that they would have to give up their rights and their careers. But also, I think a lot of women on the left are like, I'm burned out by capitalism. I wish I could go live on a farm.
And wear a beautiful dress.
And make sourdough.
And make sourdough. And like, that looks really nice. Yeah, there is absolutely an appeal to women on the left, which is why someone like Ballerina Farm, who has really towed the line in terms of being open about her politics, has been so successful in grabbing audience across the political spectrum, because there is a vision in which some of these tradwife influencers present that you can kind of project your own spin on, like onto their content. They give you just enough, but never too much. And I also think that's why that we see like an offshoot of this kind of content among women in the city who are like, I'm a stay-at-home girlfriend and I live in my, you know, rich partner's like penthouse apartment.
Right. Yeah.